They're like oyster crackers, but shaped like goldfish and flavored.
And pizza blasted.
And sometimes pizza blasted.
Get ready for live from Joystick HQ. It's Joystick Podcast, episode 18. With your hosts, Chris Pratt, Ludwig Kietzman, and Justin McElroy. And now, here is Chris Pratt.
Welcome to Joystick Podcast number 18 for Monday, October 1. I'm your host, Chris Pratt.
This is Ludwig Kietzman.
And I'm Justin McElroy.
Number 18 means that the podcast can officially buy lottery tickets, cigarettes, and porno.
That was a really original joke, by the way.
Did you like that?
I did not.
It can also vote.
Who votes?
That's true. It doesn't help anything, people. The shadow government decides all of it.
That's right. Anybody who listens to the podcast has probably played Metal Gear games, and they know that decisions like who's going to be president are decided decades in advance. Speaking of Metal Gear Solid, we saw it at TGS in Tokyo. At least Ludwig and I did. so let's finish up Tokyo. We promised a third podcast, but it turns out that things like sleep and other important realities of life got in the way of doing it. So, we had a couple things we wanted to wrap up and I guess just basically give our final impressions of the Tokyo Game Show. The first two podcasts kind of covered most of the news, which wasn't much. But Ludwig, anything, specific that you wanted to mention about TGS?
I'm thinking it's all a big blank.
It's a blank.
Do we even go to TGS?
Yeah, it's a whole other country.
Yeah, you definitely did.
I have pictures to prove it to you. So here's some fun stuff that we did. We went to the Sega Joypolis, giant Sega theme park / arcade, on the island or region of Odaiba in Japan, in Tokyo. That was a lot of fun. It was kind of weird, in so much as they actually had like attractions, like rides there.
To go with those attractions.
And lines. You had to get in a line to play like special versions of arcade games. So, I stood in line with a friend of mine to play House of the Dead 4 Special, and Ludwig and Andrew stood in line to play... Which one did you guys play again?
Let's Go Jungle Special.
Oh, Let's Go Jungle Special. So the special part is pretty much means that you get to wait in a line for about an hour, which was pretty special for an arcade. And then once you get in, you sit in a big, like, two-seated chair, and all it does is spin around to a screen behind you if there's bad guys behind you, and then it spins around again to a screen in front of you. And every once in a while, you get, like, a blast of air on your neck, which is really special. Other than that, it's just a regular light gun game that you waited in line for, which makes you feel kind of stupid by the time you leave. So for 500 yen, which is, like, almost $5, you get to spin in a chair.
Well, I liked Let's Go Jungle.
I don't know
if our listeners are familiar with it, but essentially you're on a safari in what I'm guessing it's Africa, and you get attacked by giant spiders and giant insects and giant other things that want to kill you.
Well, I mean, historically speaking, that's very similar to what life in Africa is like, right?
Oh yes, it's, as a simulation, it's probably better than the upcoming Africa game on PS3.
Which, as far as I know,
has shooting.
Yeah, as far as I know, Africa doesn't have giant spiders, which is really historically inaccurate.
It's Africa, it's Africa with a K, though, so it's an alternate reality with giant spiders. we're never brought over by the French.
Exactly. Right, so basically, you were talking about the area being sprayed out. Like, the first thing a character does in Let's Go Jungle is there's like bugs behind you, and he sprays a can of repellent at you, and it's in your eyes, and like you get this blast of air, which is kind of funny because you're trying to shoot things and you've got air blowing in your face. And I enjoy things that spin around. I'm not ashamed to admit it. I like spinning chairs.
All right, so
they're fun.
There you go. Ludwig and I had two entirely different impressions of the special versions of Sega's arcade classics, but we We also got to go to another arcade on the same area that had a Silent Hill arcade. We ran a post on it this morning with a video. Justin, I think, was pretty impressed.
In his naivete, assumed that it would be an awesome game.
It looked cool in the video. Oh, except the hand looked kind of swole.
the real game, I mean, it's got a kind of a cool cabinet. And who isn't swayed by cool arcade cabinets? I mean, really, you see it and you're kind of like, wow, that's awesome. But unfortunately, like most light gun games, you just shoot stuff.
Well, I mean, that's not even the problem. Okay, so not only is it a terrible Silent Hill game, because it's a light gun game, it's also a terrible light gun game, because it's a Silent Hill game. Yeah, exactly. It's got this slow Silent Hill-ish pace where you walk around and explore, and extremely slow monsters attack you, but that just equates to boredom in a light gun shooter. It's ridiculous. I mean, there are times we just look around waiting for something to happen. I mean, have you ever seen that in a light gun game? It's ridiculous.
It's innovative. It's new. yeah. Nurses with their skin inside out, they walk really slow.
Well, it just cheapens the whole Silent Hill experience, in my opinion. Just like, you know, here come a bunch of nurses, shoot them quickly before you die.
I should preface this by saying that Ludwig is a big Silent Hill fan, and on the train away from that arcade, he actually explained the whole mythology to me, because I forget it day to day, because it doesn't make any sense.
You don't remember it at all now.
You must have slept right.
you're gonna have to explain it to me again. There's something about like girls who had burns who have nightmares. it's I don't know. I saw the movie and everything. It just doesn't make sense.
Ludwig, just explain the whole thing, and I promise I'll keep recording.
We totally won't edit it out.
And we're back. Wow, Ludwig, fascinating stuff. Wow, 45 minutes. Who would have thought? But, man, what a great mythology. So, next up.
So Tokyo. Another highlight of our trip, it isn't really video game related, but I thought I'd share anyway because it was a lot of fun. We went to a restaurant called Ninja. That was actually the name of the restaurant, just Ninja. It was actually kind of hard to find, as you'd imagine a restaurant called Ninja would be. And when you get in to the restaurant, they tell you that a ninja is going to escort you to the restaurant, and then like this wall opens up, and a ninja comes out and makes like the ninja hand thing with the two fingers in the front, and they escort you to your room, which is kind of like a little room in an underground cave, and they take you through all these corridors that I'm pretty sure that every single one of them would break all the ADA rules in America. Like, there's no wheelchair ramps and the ceiling is too low, and
ninjas don't need wheelchairs.
There's no railings where there should be. I was, you know, we went with Chibi-D, and you know, he and I are both pretty tall. And at one point, I turned behind, and he's crawling on all fours because we can't even kneel walking through this place. But you have to say some magic word, and a drawbridge comes down, and you go across it, and then they usher you into the eating room, and the food was pretty good.
I thought it was kind of it was a surprise every time. It was a hit and miss. Like, what do you get now? Is it delicious or terrible?
Well, we got the chef's tasting menu, so it was a handful of everything from the menu. And it, you know, the restaurant was pretty expensive. You know, it wasn't like, you know, even though it sounds like a cheesy theme restaurant, it was really kind of geared towards a different audience entirely. But back to the cheesy theme stuff, because that's really the best part. Halfway towards the end of the meal, this guy comes in and explains that he'll be our ninja magician of the night.
In other words, a ninjician.
Or, as we had some debate, or a maginja, depending on...
You know, that's a sad day in any ninja parent's life when their son, your ninja son comes to you and says, "Mom, Dad, I decided I want to be a ninja magician."
but what about killing people? No,
you know, no, it's not for me. Give me the limelight.
Vegas show. So the ninjician. Well, the other thing is, like, ninjician sounds kind of like a ninja pediatrician.
Or a dietitian.
Or a ninja dietitian. Yeah, it's kind of confusing, but I think ninjician's probably the best term. But anyway, so the ninjician comes out, and he's going to give us this magic show. And so after we finally got over the fact that it was a ninja delivering a magic show to us, we figured, okay, we'll give him the benefit of the doubt. And sure enough, the guy did some serious ninja magic. At one point, he put like a deck of cards in my hand, and I put my hand over it. So it was like between my two hands, and I had my hands closed around it. And he did some weird ninja stuff, and he did like the old fake out where he holds up a card, and it's not the right card. And he's like, well, look in your hand. And then in my hand, instead of a deck of cards, it was like a piece of lucite or something. Kind of weird, like where did it come from? I don't know.
Isn't that weird? And I'll say your wallet was gone.
Whose wallet is this? Well, at a certain point, like Ludwig was standing to the side of the guy, and he's like trying to like look at his hands to see everything he does, and it was pretty hard, you know. It was sleight of hand stuff, but who better to do?
He was super fast. Who just better like to a
do,
ninja
to do sleight of hand tricks than a ninja? It's really, you know, it doesn't seem like the most logical career for a ninja. But in this day and age, when ninja services aren't that useful anymore, you know, it makes a lot of sense for ninjas to go into the line of sleight of hand magic tricks.
You got to pay the bills somehow.
Seriously. And the restaurant was pretty expensive, so I think he's making a pretty good
living. Right.
So what else in Tokyo? There was the arcade. You guys went to the Square Enix store, Ludwig. How was that? You spent a lot of money on a Chocobo mug?
Well, I spent the least amount of money out of everyone. I didn't buy a fancy Dirge of Cerberus Zippo lighters and jewelry.
All right, that's really embarrassing that anybody bought that.
It was Andrew. He says he bought it for a friend, though.
Sure, yeah.
I bought a Chocobo mug because I thought it was really adorable. And what else did I get? I got two action figures.
You mean dolls?
Yes, dolls. I pose them and talk to them.
Take pictures of them.
Shut up!
So that was, you know, that was kind of some of the ancillary TGS stuff that we did, in addition to, you know, trying to get lost as frequently as possible, and you know, all the other fun stuff that you do when you're in Tokyo, like break their local customs, you know. Eating on the train and that kind of thing. That's always fun. Next year, though, Justin, we'll bring you. We'll pack you in the luggage if we need to.
Everybody heard that, right? All right.
Also, next year we need to arrive there earlier.
Yeah.
So I don't actually have to get off the plane and walk right onto the show floor.
Yeah, concur.
I don't want to do that again.
We're going to do it a month earlier next time.
So let's talk about a game that real Americans actually give a crap about.
Oh, so speaking of this game, I was in Japan on Halo 3 launch day, and I tried to find a couple game stores that were doing anything, and that wasn't happening. So I figured 7-Eleven, you know, they had the whole Halo thing. They even had it in Japan, and I tried, I think I asked them, at least using my friend's broken Japanese, if they had anybody come in to buy any that day, and they didn't. So
I wanted to make a point real quick about Halo 3. I went in this weekend. I went on a trip to Pittsburgh for a wedding, and I stopped at a bunch of gas stations, you know, like you do on any trip. Pee breaks, gassing up, whatever.
Also, and if you're a shoplifter.
Yeah, if you love to shoplift, if you're a kleptomaniac and you can't make that long distance. But not a single gas station had game fuel. I think it has completely disappeared. Like, where I think they must have like coordinated pulled all of it, and I thought it was delicious. That's a shame, but
they must have timed it, you know, to run out exactly, you know, the day of Halo 3. So everybody,
I guess, but that doesn't even make sense. Like if you didn't buy it, if you didn't help them get to that sweet $170 million figure they were jonesing for, then. They're not interested in you.
They're like, yeah, see ya. Hey, all you game. Well, you know, that's the sign of a real Halo fanboy. The people that want game fuel year round. it's a problem. Yeah. So Halo 3, little game, came out on Tuesday. Conveniently enough, it came out right when, you know, people were in Tokyo, and it wasn't really the best timing in that regards. And on top of that, you know, Microsoft made a big deal out of, you know, in Microsoft's outside PR firm, trying to make sure that everybody got all their stuff in time. They sent out this huge duffel bag full of Halo stuff that we have in our Halo 3 Legendary giveaway. Unfortunately, Microsoft sent things to wrong addresses and sent things late, and it was kind of a big mess. But regardless, we ended up getting our review up last week. A little later than we would have liked, but that's okay. But Halo, so you guys have been playing it, I imagine, right? Ludwig said he beat the campaign. Justin, did you beat the campaign yet?
Die in a fire. My 360 is currently being repaired by Bill Gates with his little miniature diamond soldering iron.
Well, I'm actually still waiting for mine as well. I bought a core as soon as mine died, but like it's been over a month, and I'm still waiting. So
I actually just got
feel your pain to some degree.
A little bit. I actually just got mine back the day before I went to Tokyo. So I came back to a newly fixed up 360. Mine took about 4 weeks also to get fixed, maybe a little longer with the shipping.
Yeah, mine is theoretically on its way back. I've got like a tracking number. So, but I mean, it was, I actually considered like going to rent one from like Rent-A-Center or something. But they required no fewer than four references, like people who they would then call and say, Justin's trying to rent a 360. What do you think about that? And also a credit check. And I'd rather my credit not say couldn't afford to buy a 360, but really was jonesing to play Halo 3. So
yeah, not that great when you go to buy a home or something.
Yeah, right. It says here you rented a video game console. It was a dark time in my life, and like nobody rents them anymore. When I worked at Blockbuster twice, they rented them. They rented all the systems. I don't know why they don't do it anymore, but I'm still waiting. And of course, it got here like the day I mailed it away, like into the package with the collector's edition in it. And also, Microsoft sent me a media kit, and it's in this like super exciting 10 box. And I opened it up, and I'm like, oh, what wonders are inside here? And it's literally two burnt DVDs of screenshots. And
yeah, I saw that.
Guys, I've got the internet. Stop it. You're wasting your money. Send me a check for the value of this item. And it would be of more use to me and probably to you. Just send me a check for whatever you spent on this, because it's silly.
We should just ask him to donate all that Halo swag money to charity instead. You know, we'll pick a charity. You guys can donate, you know, the hundreds of dollars you've spent on stuff. I mean, they sent the giant duffel bag to the wrong address, to an address that I told them over a month ago to change. So it's somebody else's house now, and they got, you know, $1,000 worth of Halo swag there that they're holding for me. Ridiculous. But so, you know, it all doesn't matter when you actually break it down and figure out how much they made on Halo 3. So,
a bajillion?
Yeah, they made a bajillion. So Microsoft had a milestone they wanted to hit, something like 155 million they needed to beat Spider-Man 3. So they needed to beat that. Halo 2 had originally beat Spider-Man 1, I think, at like 125 million. So they ended up raking in 170 million in the first 24 hours, handily trouncing Spider-Man 3, the Harry Potter movies. You know, there's some debate over, I think, the Harry Potter books made more money in a single day. At least the last book did, but you know that doesn't count because you know who really reads books. Point being is they made a ton of money, and for a video game, you know, even though the price of entry, you know, for the games, especially including the Legendary Edition, which is like $5,000, it's really impressive. You know, it's something that kind of, again, just like Halo 2 did, puts video games back on the map of mainstream, you know, consumer culture. And anybody who, you know, has been anywhere in the last 2 weeks, you know, the Halo commercials and Halo swag and Halo press coverage and Halo Slurpee cups and Halo game fuel and Pontiac commercials, it's pretty deafening. And it seems kind of weird for a video game, but, you know, then you compare it to something like a movie launch. That happens every summer. You know, every summer you get Spider-Man 3 cereal and whatever. Yeah. So, It's pretty impressive, you know. I'm sure by next summer a new movie will come out that'll beat Halo 3 again until Microsoft makes another video game that has, you know, or requires, I should say, a gross that's as high as Halo. I don't know what it'll be next. Maybe it'll be Halo Kart Racers, maybe.
Who knows? I don't.
But you haven't had a chance to play it. Ludwig, are you back with us? No? Ludwig's not back?
I am back. Yeah.
He's back. So you've been playing it. You beat a campaign on normal, and you said it's the best Halo yet, you think?
Yeah, I think so. It's really well-paced, and there's none of the problems that the first two games had. It just feels really refined, and I don't think it'll completely change your mind if you haven't liked Halo before. But, you know, and it finishes the story, which is what I was interested in. I really enjoyed it. I finished the fight, yeah.
You did. I've been playing on Heroic, because I played Halo 2 on Heroic, and I found that Heroic on 3 is, like, really, like, twice as hard. There's mm-hmm. been a couple scenes so far, two scenes in particular, that I've just gotten my ass kicked, and it's taken me, like, you know, 15, 20 times to just go over the scene again and again and again and constantly, like, refine my strategy to get it, like, mm-hmm. perfect, and that's pretty much the only way I've been able to pass it. There's one where there's, it seems like 20 brutes in a hallway, and there's two levels, and one of the brutes has a gravity hammer. So I got to the point where I could really kind of consistently kill every single brute. And then as soon as I get to the guy with the gravity hammer, I mean, like, one hit and you're dead. And, you know, there's no checkpoint between the opening of that scene and the end. So that took quite a while until I could kind of perfect the way I dealt with the gravity hammer brute.
Yeah, I started on Heroic, and this was, like, on Wednesday morning when I got back from Japan. So I started on Heroic, and then I just decided, I'm not really in the mood for, you know, putting out much of a chance. I just want to enjoy the story at first, and then I'll switch to Heroic when I play through it again. But Heroic is definitely harder than I remember it being from Halo 2 as well.
Yeah.
Maybe you guys are just getting older.
That's not true, is it?
I don't know, and you were saying about refining your strategy. That's the one thing that I really enjoy about Halo. Is a lot of people look at it and see, you know, they just see the first-person shooter. But, you know, the way the weapons and the grenades and all that stuff interact with each other, it's got really fun combat. Certainly a lot better than most first-person shooters, I would say.
And a lot of the game is based on, like, little battles, you know? So you get to, like, a scene, and that scene kind of plays out, and there's a certain order and pace of things, and you need to try and take everything into account. What are the vehicles? What are the enemies? Are there guys on turrets over there? You know?
Yeah.
And you kind of have to work that all together and make sure you have the right weapon balance, or, you know, that there's other weapons available you can pick up. And, you know, I'm really enjoying Heroic, as frustrating as a couple of the scenes have been, just because it really kind of pushes the limit of what you're capable of doing with the amount of ammo and weapons you have and, you know, how difficult the enemies are. And you really kind of have to make sure that things are going really perfectly, or else you won't make it through, you know. So a lot of times you die and you just have to keep getting better and better.
The people who are complaining about the game's graphics who say they aren't very good, I'm willing to venture that those people are insane.
Yeah, well, there's the whole 640...
The lighting is beautiful in this game.
There's the whole 640p debate.
That's not very many P's.
You need more P's to be a good next-gen game. It turns out that Halo 3 isn't necessarily running at the full 720p resolution. Some guys, I guess, took, like, rulers and, like, screenshots and, I mean, a lot of time to figure
out. They counted pixels.
They literally counted pixels. So the pixels are the P's, and they came up with... It's 80 P's short of 720p. So Luke Smith wrote on the Bungie update something about, like, it really has 1280 P's, and there's double frame buffers, and the buffers do the HDR lighting this way. And that, I mean, it makes no sense to me. You know, I'm but a simple writer. You know, I make words. But I guess the point being is that there's more going on behind the scenes than it appears. But point being is that the system, you know, up-reses it to 720 or 1080p. You know, it's still playing back at the native resolution of your television, you know, if your television's 720 or 1080, and it still looks phenomenal. I mean, hold that game up to Halo 2 and tell me it you know, or even Halo 2 upsampled to 720p, and and say that it doesn't look high res. I mean, it's kind of this another part of the ridiculous console war, you know, where Killzone 2 is going to run at 1080p and it looks
great. I'm blacking it.
Like the BioShock thing, the widescreen issue there.
Yeah.
It's not. I'm blacking out. We gotta stop, guys. This is the most boring thing that's ever happened to me. Please. I'm gonna black out. Let's close with this. It costs $60, and you get so much game for it that you gotta buy it. And who cares how many P's? You know, the P's stand for purpose. You know how many purposes those guys' lives are short. Get it together, fellas. Nobody gives a shit. You wasted an afternoon. Moving on.
All right. Well, just to reinforce the fact that the game, regardless of its low P score, has a really good general ranking overall. GamePro gave it 100 out of 100. Game Informer 98 out of 100. GameSpot 95 out of 100. You check game rankings or Metacritic in this case. Metacritic has the score as a 95 out of 100 based on 50 overall reviews. So the game's getting some pretty solid praise. The multiplayer, from what I've played of it so far, really good.
Feels very complete.
Yeah, I don't know most of the levels, and that's another reason I'm playing on Heroic. I'm going to try and improve my multiplayer skills. But I don't know most of the levels, so I've been getting my ass handed to me. But it definitely has a lot of functionality. The party system trumps Halo 2's, and it's the first game to do so, which is kind of funny. The film system is pretty cool, the saved movies, the screenshots. So, seriously, if you have a 360 and don't have it, pick one up. I actually know a couple people who picked up 360s last week just to get it, so I'll be curious to see the NPD numbers for September, see if it made a really notable impression there. But that's the Halos. Moving on to Halos, we can go to Wii stuff. So, Wii. What's going on with Wii?
Probably not a shock to anybody. Apparently, Nintendo Power, in an upcoming issue, is going to be reporting that Samba de Amigo is coming to the Wii, which is, of course, the Maraca game, if you never played it on Dreamcast.
It's a pretty obvious Wii game, then.
Yeah, I mean, obvious. Obvious, nice. Except after nights, right? In Samba de Amigo, you press left on the pad to shake the left maraca, and you pull the trigger to shake the right one, and you make the monkey dance by moving the controller back and forth.
Dance, monkey, dance! Dance, I'm going to be using that Zoolander picture for every post in Samba de Amigo that we do.
Awesome. Kill the Malaysian Prime Minister.
The game is being developed. It's being put out by, obviously, publisher Sega, but developer Gearbox Software, who, not the
weird
first,
game for them.
Yeah, not yeah. the first developer I would have thought to do this. Gearbox did the Brothers in Arms games, and they also just recently announced a new next-gen shooter called, that one is called...
Borderlands.
Yeah. So it's another, high-def, next-gen-y sort of thing. They're also doing Samba de Amigo, so that's pretty cool.
They did the PC version of Halo as well, I think.
They also did a bunch of...
Some sort of 007 James Bond game some point.
Yeah, Nightfire.
And
now Samba de Amigo. Maybe they really have always wanted to make a Maraca game. Or maybe they knew it would be really easy and they wanted some money. I bet it's that one.
Yeah. They figured, so we got people working on Brothers in Arms, we got people working on Borderlands, and we got this intern who isn't doing anything.
So. Yeah, go pound this out. Go into the code for the Dreamcast game and replace Maraca with Nunchuck. Just do a Control F. Replace all. But I hope the controls aren't sloppy, because you know who that's going to upset?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's gonna upset Dave Perry.
He
really hates the Wii, doesn't he?
Yeah, apparently.
It's like every week there's a comment from Dave Perry about the Wii.
He seems to be a little outspoken about the Wii, and I don't know if he just hasn't been able to find one yet. Reggie just announced that that shortages. Well, I wouldn't say he announced so much as he screamed it from a mountaintop that Wii supply was going to be short, guaranteed this holiday. but hold on, he says that has nothing to do with production, though. You know, they're making as many as they can, which isn't enough.
Yeah. So yes, it does.
Production. Anyway.
Yeah.
So Dave Perry. Dave Perry says that gamers ignore the Wii's, quote, sloppy controls. And so on the one hand, does the Wii have sloppy waggle controls? Yeah, a lot of the games, really pretty ugly when it comes to the control scene.
But is that the game's fault or the Wii's fault?
I think the bad games have sloppy Wii control. I think Metroid Prime
controls. So do the bad games on 360 and PS3.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I think what he's talking about is something that we've been talking about a ton, you know, over and over and over, is that developers aren't putting a lot of resources and time into their Wii games. So as a result, you have a new controller that developers aren't really willing to put a lot of time into figuring out how to use properly. You get sloppy controls. You know, so is he saying that, yeah, there's a lot of games with sloppy controls that gamers are, you know, willing to ignore? I don't know. I mean, I think also a lot of the people buying Wii games aren't necessarily, you know, quote, gamers. You know, I think they might not even know what is good controls or bad controls.
They're not buying Metroid Prime 3, though, which is the problem.
Yeah, you play Metroid Prime 3 or Resident Evil 4, and both of those games have really sharp, really accurate controls. So I don't think it's necessarily a problem with the Wii. I think if people are ignoring, you know, I don't think people are ignoring the glut of games with poor controls. You know, we write about it a lot and read about it a lot. And, you know, people like Dave Perry say it a lot, although he might be conflating two things, that a lot of Wii games do have sloppy controls. But I don't think it has necessarily anything to do with the Wii itself.
I think Dave Perry should not say anything else until he makes a game that is half as relevant as Earthworm Jim was at the beginning of the Clinton administration. As soon as he makes another game that reaches that high bar, then he can talk about anything ever again. Until then, collectively.
Into the Matrix.
Yeah. Thank you for reinforcing my point, Ludwig. Yeah, until he does anything. Yeah. Yes, David. The RC Copter jam back in 98 or whatever, super hot. Now, please stop it. You're killing me.
Well, now he's working on MMOs for Acclaim.
Non-existent ones, yes.
Don't forget Dance Online.
I said
Dance because it has an exclamation mark in the title.
Dance!
It's going to be really hot. I'm really excited about that non-existent jam, too. So lots of really good games that aren't going to actually come out at any point in anywhere but Korea. But it's going to be really great for him. You know what I'd like to see him do? Make a Wild 9 sequel.
I like thought you were going to say apologize for Path of Neo.
No, that was a really good game, but the Wild 9 was just much, much better. I get it when somebody who's relevant says something about, like, you know, the Wii's two GameCubes duct taped together, what have you. But why, Dave Perry? Why do we care?
Well, it gets a little different. So Chris Hecker, the guy who famously said the Wii was two GameCubes stuck together, he was speaking specifically about why they're not going to be porting Spore, why it would be difficult to port Spore to the platform. That makes sense, right? You're talking about a game that has massive amounts of procedurally generated content. Yeah, the Wii might have a little trouble doing that. Or you talk about Julian Egebrecht, the guy who did Lair. And when he's talking about the Wii, it's coming as a former Nintendo second-party developer who just made a PS3 game with motion controls. So when he talks about the Wii, it's, you know, from a slightly more interesting perspective. But Dave Perry talking about the Wii just doesn't really make a lot of sense.
I like Dave Perry's games back when they were good, but...
And called it MDK.
Yeah, and MDK is a great game, see? But, like, why... I just don't understand the media love of... Why I don't see why he has any place to speak about anything. And David... If you're not listening to this because you aren't, don't take it personally because, like I said, Wild 9, awesome. Just the why? Why snipe at the Wii if you haven't even tried to develop for it? I don't get it.
You know, please do develop for it. The thing needs more games.
Yeah, that's from Jim 3 confirmed Wii.
MDK would work great on Wii. Do it.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Dave, do it.
Yeah, do it.
I want to use the parachute thing. Do it.
Yeah, Dave, please stop talking. Just go make some games.
Make some games.
Yeah.
Moving on. So Sony has this console called the PS3. Comes in a bunch of different versions, like full of different gigabytes and stuff. There's been rumblings for a long time of a 40 gigabyte model. The 40 gigabyte model was going to show up at Tokyo Game Show, but it didn't. It's going to be cheaper than the other one, but who knows. Now there's another report that Sony is going to announce a 40 gigabyte model according to, quote, an electronic manufacturing news source. So a lot of times this happens where, you know, there's kind of leaks from the manufacturers in China or in Taiwan in this case, where, you know, word from assembly lines kind of filters out to news sources there that they're working on different models or different versions. So apparently they're saying that that there's going to be a new version. Speculates that the new console might, quote, lose USB ports or backwards compatibility to keep the model cheap. I don't know about it losing I mean, maybe some of the USB ports, but, you know, I would think that they'd lose, like, the compact flash reader before that.
Yeah, they would make too much money off the USB ports for that to be...
Yeah, like, you actually use the USB ports as opposed to the compact flash port, you know, which, you know, at that point, just plug in a compact flash reader into the USB port, for crying out loud.
Right.
So, I mean, all point being is that the rumor just popped up again. So right after Tokyo Game Show, it wasn't announced there, but it's back. This thing isn't going to die anytime soon, probably until they come out with a 40 gigabyte PS3.
I feel like from this whole story, there's a little bit of like where there's smoke, there's fire thing going on. It's the same thing we saw with the 80 gigabyte, where you saw a little leak here and a little rumor here and the picture of the back of a system there. And like... almost without fail, also the HDMI port on the 360, same principle. Almost without fail, when you start to see when you see one of these things, maybe not, when they start to pile up a little bit like this, yeah, probably.
So, speaking of consoles that have USB ports that are used for stuff,
this is going to be a good one.
They just announced the pricing for Rock Band. For 360, PS3, and PS2. The 360 and PS3 versions are both going to be $170 for the bundle, but of course the PS3 version is wireless, whereas the 360 version is going to be wired to a USB port. This has been rumored for a long time. You know, we just never had any official confirmation, not only on price, but on the fact that the 360 controller will be wired. The reason being, Microsoft uses a proprietary wireless protocol, and they have licensing fees attached to it. So in order to keep the prices similar, they have to charge, you know, basically more for the wireless controller. So they're just giving the 360 owners a wired one. A wireless controller will be separate for $80. It's unclear if there's going to be a separate bundle that's going to cost, you know, an extra $20. So you can get the whole thing as a bundle, but who knows. But the game is coming out on November 23rd, which is... lucky for all you shoppers, Black Friday. So we know how much everybody loves to go to the mall on Black Friday, which is, I think, erroneously called the busiest shopping day of the year. It's really not. I think that's reserved for like the Saturday before Christmas or something. But point being is it's a pretty crap day to go to the mall and buy.
No, it's the busiest.
It's the busiest, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
You check Wikipedia? Because that's always really accurate.
No, I worked in retail, and it's pretty fucking busy.
So yeah, Black Friday, you can head to the store, throw down $170 for the 360 or PS3 version. So places like Amazon had it listed as $199 for months. They've dropped it down to $170 now. So the price, I think that price is pretty good for the whole bundle.
I think that price is great, honestly. I wouldn't have been too put out by $200. I think $200 is what everybody was expecting, at least I was. But to come out at $170, if you're in the market for that, that's not a mass market price. But if you're the sort that likes that sort of game, I think it's a great deal. Does that make sense? Like, it's not the sort of thing that's going to make Rock Band the sort of like worldwide, you know, phenomenon that Guitar Hero was. But I think if you're into that sort of thing, it's a great price. I'm definitely going to get it. Forget about it. $170? Yeah.
Well, keep in mind, you can also get everything separate. The guitar is going to be $60, for both wireless on 360 is going to be 80. The wired drum kit is going to be 80. The wired microphone is going to be 30. So, you know, you can buy it as a karaoke game, or you could buy it as a drum game, or you could buy it as a guitar game. If you got the game, just the guitar and the game, then it is commensurate with something like Guitar Hero 3. And it's basically a Guitar Hero game, so there's no reason it couldn't be just as popular as Guitar Hero, right? Just as a guitar game, but it has all this other possible functionality that you could use if you wanted to, like drums and singing.
I think split the cost with your friends.
Yeah, you buy a bundle.
Unless you want to play all the instruments at the same time by yourself.
The problem with splitting the cost with your friends is that, you know, you only get one game disc, so, you know, you still have three things and you only get one game.
Well, I mean, they'll have to come over to your house to play it.
Yeah.
And you can still use the wireless controller from Guitar Hero, right?
Well, I don't think you can use the wireless guitar. You can use the 360's USB guitar, which works.
Well, but there's a wireless... The Guitar Hero 3 guitar controller for 360.
Yes, the Guitar Hero 3 controller. Yeah, they did say you could use Guitar Hero controllers, which so Guitar Hero 2 obviously is what they're talking about. But I imagine that's going to also extend to Guitar Hero 3's controller. I'm imagining the folks at EA and Harmonix haven't been able to actually test the Guitar Hero 3 controller. Something tells me that Activision didn't send one over for them, but. Yeah, I imagine it would probably work if, you know, they're expecting backwards compatibility with Guitar Hero 2 controllers.
If not, it'll be in a title update, I'm sure.
Yeah, that would be nice. You know, that way you can get your hot Guitar Hero 3 controller and just use it for... and I kind of like the Guitar Hero 3 controller, you know, at least the looks better than the Rock Band controller.
Yeah.
And I haven't been that impressed with the Rock Band controller itself touching it. It's pretty spongy. You know, and they were always quick to point out that it was a prototype, but, you know, Red Octane... were peripheral manufacturers. I mean, that was their gig, so I wouldn't be surprised if the Guitar Hero guitar was better than the Rock Band guitar anyway.
How do you feel about it? You're into rhythm games, I know. I know you're a Guitar Hero fan.
Oh, that interesting, huh? All right, I guess we're probably... there he is.
There he is.
You're dissing Chris or me? Cause...
No, I said Ludwig, so you...
I didn't hear the Ludwig part.
Oh, I'm sorry. and I'm sorry to the listener that I was too lazy to edit that part out just now.
Reeks of professionalism.
I know. What are your feelings? I know you're a big rock. You're a Guitar Hero fan. What do you think?
I can't wait
for
it because I'm really looking forward to just jamming with a fake band.
Do you think you'll be able to go back?
I'm trying to figure out which version to get though. Like I'm tempted by PS3's wireless guitar, but I already have a guitar for 360. So,
well, and you also have more friends on your 360. I mean, that's really what it comes down to for me. The game's going to be online, and I have a lot more friends that I actually play with on 360 than PS3. Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of a no-brainer there.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's
speaking of gay porno.
Why does it always come back to that on this podcast? I don't understand.
It's a theme. So, gay porno. Justin,
There's really nothing to say about the story that's funnier than the story. But Jack Thompson... He believes that the Florida bar, in their effort to have him disbarred, is collaborating against him with a gay activist attorney from Miami who also owns National Gay News. In an effort to discredit the other lawyer, Thompson submitted to the court graphic content from adult entertainment advertisers the NGN links to in an attempt to show that the other lawyer was in the business of distributing hardcore porn to anyone of any age. So he submitted it in court documents, and the judge was none too pleased about that.
Yeah, last time Jack Thompson mailed me gay porn, I wasn't that happy about it either. Just kidding, Jack. God.
I wasn't happy either the last time he did, because I didn't think it was worth my $17.99. It's like, seriously, man, if you're going to hit me up, at least hook me up, you know? Jack.
Somebody should really write a book and give it like bathroom-style reading, like just have a funny picture with a short paragraph with something funny about what Jack Thompson did at a certain point in time. A little footnote on. Like, that would be, like, great book. I mean, you could really I mean, there's just so many funny things that the guy's done that really, I mean, I enjoy reading about them so much.
Yeah, it's funny. It's almost kind of sad because he's taken himself from someone that I think people kind of saw as a threat. But I mean, is he completely discredited now? I mean, is there anybody? Will Fox News still have him on?
I mean, the great part about Jack Thompson is that for some reason, mainstream media still doesn't realize that the guy's certifiable. So, you know, as far as an adversary for video game advocates, he's ideal. He's perfect.
It's going to rule out any like legitimate debate. Like I know they were trying to hook up for PAX because it's like, what argument can't be ended with? Was that like the time you submitted gay porn to the court? It's one of the great conversation enders.
Yeah, it's an effective argument closer. Done.
It's second only to, and you're sitting in it now.
So there you go. There you go. Thank you, Mr. Thompson, for giving us something fun to write about for the week.
You're the greatest.
I mean, as soon as we got rid of Ken Kutaragi at Sony, you know, we really thought that we were done with crazy stories. But Jack really stepped up, and he's really filling in a role that I thought wouldn't be filled for years. So thank you.
Thanks, Chad. Okay, so we've got emails, but we're going to kick it off with something very exciting, an audio email. So let's all give that a listen, and then we'll come back with the answer.
Yay.
Hey, guys. This is Brett from Atlanta. Love the Joystick Podcast. Big fan. Listen to every episode. First off, don't fire Justin. He's a cardinal part of the podcast. Very funny. Anyway, on to the questions. The first question is WiiWare. I have not heard anything about WiiWare in a while. I was wondering if you guys have heard anything and what your thoughts are on that. And second is the rumblings of a 40-gig PlayStation 3. I've actually been looking into getting a PlayStation. I think it actually has a very long lifeline, and I was wondering what your thoughts were on that, too. So hope to hear from you. Thanks. Brett from Atlanta.
Okay.
That was Brett from Atlanta, yeah.
Thank you for your question, Brett. Well, we talked about the 40 gigabyte thing, didn't we?
Yeah, I think we got that taken care of. And if it does come out at 400, that's a pretty attractive price for the PlayStation 3, especially if you got a high-def set and like movies. If you really want backwards compatibility, you best hit the stores now and get a 60 gigabyte.
I know you don't have a good idea, Brett, and I have a feeling that Nintendo doesn't have a super good idea of what WiiWare is or means or what it will be used for. I mean, we've heard talk about it back and forth, but yet to see anything, you know, sort of concrete on it.
Yeah, I mean, WiiWare, they've been really vague on. You know, the only real example we have of it so far, you know, downloadable software short of VC games, is the Opera, you know, internet channel. But, you know, when are we going to start to see, you know, downloadable games that are kind of something outside of the VC mold?
Well, there is the Impossible Mission remake. That's the only WiiWare game I'm aware of.
Yeah, that's you know,
and even that's just a remake. It's not a truly original game.
Well,
which is what they're aiming for, I would assume, to have a lot of original experimental games on WiiWare.
You know, similar to Xbox Live Arcade or something. I mean, the real question with WiiWare is, you know, at what point are they going to speak up and show off, you know, real concrete product offerings and, you know, a hint of how the functionality is going to work? I mean, one of the questions for the Wii is, if you have larger downloadable games, where are you going to put them? You know, you have limited internal storage. You have, you know, even SD storage is somewhat limited. You know, if you get a 2-gig card, are you going to like hold a 500 meg game on that, or is it going to be 150 megs like Xbox Live Arcade? Or, you know, we're not really sure what the model for WiiWare is going to be. So, yeah, I'd say keep waiting. As soon as we know something, you'll obviously know it too, hopefully.
Yeah, Nintendo doesn't actually have to worry a lot about anything that's not selling three, you know, Wiis, because they're doing plenty of that. So, maybe when they need to sell more Wiis, you'll hear something else.
Well, the other thing is VC games are making them a fortune, and all they're doing is like taking ROMs of games that have existed forever, sticking them on the service and charging too much for them. So,
yeah, not a huge incentive to develop original stuff.
You know, to be fair to them, though, Sin and Punishment was announced or was released on the North American VC this morning. Neat, because the game never came out in the States before. So, you know, that's kind of nice. They charge a little more for it. They're charging $1,200. So that's $12. That's like, you know, kind of expensive for basically a ROM of a game. But it wasn't available. It was very expensive before. So, you know, I shouldn't give them too much flack for it.
Yeah. So, Ludwig, do you want to read Kip's email?
Yes, I do.
Great.
All right. Kip writes, I've been curious before as to how exactly Joystick works, so I have a few questions if you'd be so kind as to answer them. Would you all kindly answer these questions?
Yes, I do think I will answer your questions.
I don't want to, but I'm going to.
Also inject yourself with this weird stuff. Number one, with your writers scattered all over the planet, do you have any regular meetings where all of you get together, or have a lot of you just never met each other in person?
Well, as we said previously on the podcast, we do meet once a week on an offshore oil tanker platform in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. But that's just Justin, Ludwig, and I. Everybody else, they mostly work in caves.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we've to give an honest answer to our friends, the readers, we've never met. And I'm glad that we haven't, frankly, but... because I have Source, but if and SARS, but I mean, we do live in pretty disparate places. I mean, I guess shows are pretty much the only time most people get to see each other, because we really are spread out all across.
And it really is tough having to see someone like Chris when you're podcasting.
Yeah, it makes it a lot easier to do it over the internet. Right. Well, I mean, we keep Justin in, like, Justin's in West Virginia, for example, which really helps us cover the hot West Virginia gaming scene. You know, or like we keep living in South Africa. So like when there's these huge South African megatons that come out, we have somebody local and on hand to cover it for us.
I really wish there was someone to help me cover all that stuff.
Yeah, it must get
hard
tough
work
out
to
there.
It on your own.
I can't even handle all the meth busts here.
So we actually do have a couple writers in, I guess, New York and San Francisco for whatever goes on at those places too. But you know, it's important that we have writers like Justin Ludwig on the team also. So do any all of your writers write for Joystick as their full-time job, or do most of you have, quote, real jobs and write for Joystick on the side? A couple of us at Joystick have Joystick as our actual, quote, real job, where we're full-time salaried employees, which is amazing, right? But that would be just James and I. Everybody else works in a freelance position. And so, you know, if a lot of writers, if they write for us a lot and do a lot of work, they can afford to make it their full-time job. A lot of writers have other, you know, freelance writing gigs. That's kind of how the freelance thing works. You know, you have a handful of gigs and put it together.
I would say most people, almost everybody is a writer, just not exclusively for Joystick, but that's their job. We have a couple of students, I know, who are going to school and writing also at the same time. But,
well, I guess that they write, but they just write, like, you know, essays on, like, the Civil War and stuff.
Yeah, sure. Stuff that nobody cares about.
Yeah, not important stuff like games. Yeah. So,
no lolcats.
With writers all over the place, how do you keep from making duplicate posts all the time? We don't. It's a huge mess. Yeah. Well, actually, you know, we have very, very, very few duplicate. I can't even remember the last time I've seen a duplicate post. And basically, it's just, you know, we're coordinated. And, you know, the way our software platform works, it, you know, kind of helps us not do that. You know, there's technical ways and kind of hierarchical ways that we can reduce the chance of duplicates. And it also is just good searching, right? If you write a post, we have to make sure that we know about the content. So we're constantly reading Joystick. And if you're reading Joystick, you obviously know what we've written about, and then you don't make dupes. Done.
Easy. Also, good communication and love.
Lots of hugs and kisses also. Yep. Really helps. What about an editor? Does anyone take a second look at other people's posts before making them public? For the most part, yeah. There's usually somebody, either editors or other writers. You know, we're constantly reading each other's stuff and saying, like, awesome lolcat, or, you know, really funny pun in the last sentence there, Ludwig, or you don't know how to spell, fix it. So, yeah, it's a little bit.
Yeah. So that's Joystick. A fascinating look inside the mystique of Joystick. I'm sure everybody's super captivated.
Yeah. So the rest of you can wake up now. We'll get on to another question.
Yeah, really. Who wants to read this one? Comes first from Michael.
Michael. So Michael, starting with a side here. Okay, this is yeah. This is really very long. So okay, I'll get started. Aside from the everlasting console wars, a phrase that always makes me envision Skynet scenarios with the T-1000 sporting glowing red ring of death eyes, another recurring theme in the gaming media has been the death of arcades. Yeah, we put up a post on it this morning.
Yeah.
Most avid gamers seem to agree that this is a bad thing. However, with home consoles having similar peripherals and often superior graphics to their arcade peers, just ask Sega, because those House of the Dead games look pretty bad, as well as providing a community experience, it's hard to justify an arcade's existence. What I can't understand is why Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo haven't capitalized upon the lack of arcades. Imagine an arcade machine version of Gears of War that lets you sign into your Xbox Live account and get a special Ventured Outside the Home 20G achievement. What about the chance for people without sufficient numbers of consoles, TVs, or internet connections to enjoy some multiplayer gaming? What if instead of having a beta phase, as the chance to play Team Fortress 2 has been termed, or only distributing demos online, gamers also had the opportunity to find the latest and greatest offerings in arcade? Hell, I'd drop by to at least gawk and wouldn't mind dropping a couple bucks to see what all the hype for Lair, for example, was about. Or the post-review disappointment. Keep going. And we haven't. Why haven't we mimicked the Japanese adult arcade market, a place where the over 21s can hang out, play a few games, and shoot the shit? Beats the hell out of a sports bar, in my opinion. I'd agree with you there. Even Nintendo has failed to grasp the opportunity, despite having the biggest console release for party social gaming ever. If people are willing to submit themselves to public scrutiny their first time stepping up to a DDR machine, surely they'd be willing to toss a few beers back and Wii Bowl with their mates. Apart from boosting brand recognition, console sales, and legitimizing video gaming as a form of entertainment for adults, you'd think they'd capitalize on the opportunity, at least for the sake... I've been in Japan a while. I almost read that as sake.
You want to say sake.
At least for the sake of overcharging for drinks and arcade credits. Those drinks could be something like sake. Unfortunately, so far I see an era wherein video gaming is mainstream enough to promote Mountain Dew, but even the gamers' capital isn't enough to give them an ounce of respect or acceptance among the populace. Thanks for reading. Keep up the great work on the podcast. Signed, Michael. Well, thank you, Michael. It's a great question. Yeah. I think there's a... I mean, you think of a place like, you know, you're mentioning a sports bar. Think of a place like Dave & Buster's, which does have a pretty large collection of arcade games and a bar atmosphere. Everything's nicely overpriced. Adults hang out there. The downside is a lot of the games are old, you know? You know, when Ludwig and I were in Japan, like we mentioned earlier, we did try and, like, venture out and try and find, you know, the mythical Japanese arcades, and we found some of them. I was looking for Half-Life Survivor, you know, which is the Half-Life gun game, and I didn't find it anywhere. Yeah, but we did find Mario Kart GP, which is like Mario Kart, but in an arcade. Big whoop. You know, we found Silent Hill Arcade and, you know, the Sega games and stuff. But I don't know. I think part of it has to do with, you know, American entertainment habits. You know, in America... we do spend a lot more time at home entertaining ourselves. We don't have as much kind of public entertainment. You know, you go to Japan and the number of karaoke bars they have everywhere, it's staggering. And it's like these little private booths, and there's like dozens of them, and there's, you know, multiple places in each city or city center. And the closest you get in America is like a bar that has karaoke night.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you do karaoke, you do it home. You know, if you have these game systems at home, why are you going to go to an arcade and spend, you know, what can only be described as an exorbitant amount of money to play a game that you have at home that looks probably better on your 1080p flat panel?
There's also the problem of who's going to do it, because, I mean, you look at take Microsoft, for example. You brought them up. Tomorrow, or Wednesday, rather, Microsoft's going to put on sale a game called Tetris Splash that will cost you $10 to buy Tetris again.
Again.
There's really, yeah, again, and this is like day to day for them. There's really like the last thing they do is want to get into the real estate business, or the last thing is the alcohol sales business. You know, to bring that liability on themselves, there's just no reason to, you know. And then, but if it's somebody else that's doing it, Microsoft, Nintendo, and Sony aren't going to let them. You know, that little warning on the game that says, you know, it's not for public. You know, it's not supposed to be used as an attraction to you know, for your bar or whatever, right? Am I misunderstanding that? I mean, that's kind of a no-no, isn't it, to have it as a, like a public event, sort of?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's the chance of companies like Microsoft actually making the arcades themselves, like Sega's done in Japan. I think more likely, you know, he was probably wondering, why don't they just make an arcade platform, let's say, sort of like Nintendo had made an arcade platform based on the GameCube and Sony had made an arcade platform. Why don't they make an arcade platform based on the 360? They'd get more hardware sales, you know, a little bit. It's really powerful and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
They could port their games to it. You know, why don't they actually just make the platform, make games for arcades, and then they'd sell them to third parties like Dave and Buster's, who'd house them. You know, and so I think, you know, I don't know if it's a chicken or the egg. I don't know why the games at Dave and Buster's are always old. Is it because people aren't making new games? Companies aren't making new games, so there's nothing for them to buy? Or, you know, they just don't buy new games because they don't make enough money off them to, you know, justify the cost? It's probably a little bit of both, you know. It's just a general evolutionary cycle where they, you know, there was another arcade in Philadelphia, GameWorks, that was really disgusting and really filthy and really overpriced, and all the games were broken. So you go into an arcade, you spend $4 to play a game that's broken, and then they give you heck about asking for a refund on your card, and they finally shut the poor thing down and put it out of its misery. And that seems to be kind of the pace of all this stuff. But in general, I don't think arcades are coming back for a whole... I mean, a lot of the reasons that you mentioned. Do I wish that they would? Do I wish that there was something better to do on a Friday night? You leave the house and go drinking with friends at an outside location besides a bowling alley? Yeah, that would be fun, you know. But I don't think it's happening.
Well, I mean, I think one of the main points conveyed here is the direction at which arcade games are going. We're all getting arcade experiences at home, but the games you're playing on our consoles aren't going to the arcades the same way. Like, Gears of War isn't going to get an arcade version. That's interesting because I think Xbox Live, the multiplayer aspect of that, kind of diverted that to, you know, be in the home. You can still have a social experience, you know, in your house. And the state of arcades, you know, in America at least, or even here, they're dark and smoke-filled, seedy areas that you don't really want to go to, as opposed to Japan, where it's nicely lit and open. I'd say if there wasn't a strong online component to our consoles, maybe there'd be more of a chance of console games going to the arcade and, you know, being put into public places.
Well, it makes it funny that the console with the most arcade-like functionality, you know, the Wii, doesn't have a very good online component, but...
Yeah, sure, but I mean, like, you know, we've got Xbox Live Arcade, which is to bring old arcade games into the home.
Yeah, and it also has the scoring system.
No, nothing going the other way.
I mean, the scoring
except
system.
Except for Half-Life 2, for instance, the Survivor. Yeah.
Which I really wanted to play, damn it. Silent Hill also. But you take a game like, you know, Pac-Man CE, and I get a lot of the fun of the old arcades where I constantly try and improve my score and compare my score to friend scores and, you know, look at that leaderboard. And that's a ton of fun. It's like looking at the leaderboard and your own local bar or something, and you know, you see a bunch of people you know and what their scores are, and you know, you try and compete. So you do get a lot of that same fun. Part of me kind of grieves for arcades, and then part of me kind of says good riddance. You know, I don't think that they were doing a lot interesting, and even going to Japan and seeing all their arcade games there, I don't see a lot there that I'm really desperate to have here. You know, short of a good time. You know, but.
Yeah, it really depends on why are you going to the arcade in the first place. Are you going to play games, or are you going there to play games with your friends? You know, in which case, if you're playing with your friends, maybe it's just better to, you know, that's probably what Live is obviating.
I mean, you know what we really need? There's a bar in Philadelphia that once a week does a Guitar Hero night, and they have like a couple, there's like a room upstairs and a room downstairs, and they have like a couple different consoles set up. And you can go play games there and drink beers with your friends and, you know, challenge other people. I mean, with the cost of video game consoles being so cheap, I think, you know, outlets should just do more things like that. Like, go to a place that you can, you know, buy your beers and hang out with your friends and play games in a kind of, you know, relaxed adult environment. You know, it was similar to karaoke bars. I can't believe that we don't have actual karaoke places here that aren't just, it's not an open bar where you're singing in front of a bunch of strangers, but an actual small private room where you, you know, drink beers and hang out with, you know, five of your friends and sing, you know, Pat Benatar songs. I'm telling you, if somebody out there listening is an entrepreneur, you should make a karaoke bar. I think you'd make a lot of money. Anyway, last reader question.
This is a great email.
Justin, you should read it since we read it.
Okay. Yeah. Hi, my name is Alex. I'm from New Zealand, and me and my friends love your website and podcast. I was just wondering what happened to you guys having guests on your show, and what do you think about religion?
I like how those two. He just snuck that one in at the end.
He just sneaks it in there.
It's like this really heavy question just gets dropped on you from nowhere.
P.S. Please fire Justin. P.P.S. and Chris. P.P.P.S. Ludwig is awesome. So
there you go.
There's that.
What happened to having guests on the show? Well, when we added Justin to the mix,
nobody likes us.
Yeah. What's the matter? We're not good enough for you? When we added Justin to the mix and you have three people, guests become kind of large, four people, and then, adding another person to the show and then editing and then getting people on, it just makes it kind of cumbersome. That said, yeah, we are planning to have guests back on, just probably not as a regular thing every single week.
It works actually better in our new format for us to have interview segments rather than trying to get four people talking about the same thing all together, because it's tough.
It is. It's tough. What do we think about Death to the Infidels? That's
JC Forever. I am working on getting a couple guests, so exciting guests too that you'll like.
Oh, I don't even know about this. So, I wonder who that
yeah.
is.
It's going to be fun. It's exciting. But also JC for life. Most def. Big
out.
Baby Jesus in the house. Wu Tang also is another religion. So that's something I feel strongly about. I'm really into both of those.
So that's our thoughts on religion. As you can see, we have very sophisticated. I mean, Justin went to seminary, so very sophisticated, very kind of nuanced, deep thoughts on religion, meaning of life. That's what we usually talk about when we're not blogging about games. So I'm glad you brought that up, Alex.
Yeah. So that's the end of the show.
That's it. We're done. So this is obviously coming out a little late. We'll probably have another show for you by the end of the week with all the tasty morsels that have trickled out.
We'll get back on schedule. This Tokyo thing has just messed us up. But we're back on now.
Oh, we're back.
We're so back. So very back.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll check you out later in the week.
Bye.
Red eye, do you have to fly all night just to feel all right? Red eye, I'm asking you.
Joystick.com. Inspired Justin McElroy.